and Brit. Brad and Brit, the perfect combination of brawn and wit. Politics, sports, and trending shit. Let's tune in to Brad and Brit.
It is the Brad and Brit cast. Hi, and welcome. It's our first one for this week. We're able to be seen live on video on lots of fun platforms like Facebook, YouTube, the Dumont Network. We got them all. They're all covered.
The Dumont Network.
If you're having trouble picking that one up, just don't worry about it.
Are you relieved now that the damn ship has been removed from the Suez Canal? Can you now sleep at night?
Well, I am, and you know how I'm not the kind of guy that just wants to take credit.
Oh yeah,
for everything.
No.
That's not you. Sometimes I just do.
Yeah.
And I did send them a note on Saturday saying, if you use cat litter and rock it back and forth, you'll get the traction and it'll get out. Now, I'm not saying that there's a direct connection between cat litter and you know, liberating the ship. But
now, see, and again, I hate for everything to go back to Trump, but can you imagine him being an officer? Nobody ever thought of doing it until I thought it was doing it. Rocking back and forth. They should have just rocked back, and nobody thought of it until I thought of it. I got in there. The experts thought they knew everything, but I have, you know, what they call a good brain.
Wait, how many Three Stooges are there where people are pulling on something? There's a heave-ho thing,
right?
And severe injury results. I can't tell you what, but that happened a lot in the Three Stooges movies, which gives you our frame of reference. All right. I want to start with the Atlanta, Georgia, Coca-Cola, Home Depot,
yeah,
Delta Airlines,
yeah,
UPS.
I did take a moment to. I looked at your Facebook page as a means of show preparation today, so I'm kind of in on the mindset that you're going with here. I'm not coming in blind like usual.
Right. So far, I've only seen the statements from Coke and from Home Depot, and they're similar. They're all coming out of the same group of consultant flack lawyer pieces of shit who have these companies say, well, we're for diversity and we're for an honest vote. They may as well go as far as saying the integrity of the vote must be protected. Why don't you just go all in with the Republican twisting of the whole story, of the whole issue, of the whole idea that the Republicans are voting this to suppress the vote, and the Democrats are trying to do what America has been doing since it was founded, which is slowly but surely make progress and expand the number of people who can vote and are not barred from voting. That's been the march. The Republicans are trying to turn back the clock. We all know the stakes here. Even T-Berry agrees.
He's way more upset than those idiots at Coca-Cola are. He's like, even they should be upset about this, and he's the one that's caught raising hell.
All right, so I have this feeling. I know what happened. I think there's, again, mostly but not all white guys in the corporate suites of these companies anymore. There are minorities now. They're not always just all white guys.
Correct.
They're not all. But
correct.
I think. And this is just me. I have no idea whether this is true. I didn't read it. But I'm thinking, they're thinking, you know what? God damn it. We supported the goddamn fucking Black Lives Matter thing last spring and summer. Wasn't that good enough?
What more do you
Jesus
want?
Jesus Christ.
What more do you people want from us?
Right. Now, I'm exaggerating.
Right.
But I think there may be a little tiny bit of that punching through here. And, of course, the two things, they're really kind of not related. What happened then, that caused protests and some violence. But that's not related to what the Republicans are doing right now in response. And, by the way, there's so many disingenuous, lying moments that you see while people are talking or writing about this. And one of them was with, are you familiar with this woman, Selena Zito? Have you ever seen her? She's got black hair. She's about 60. She writes, she's from Pittsburgh, and she writes for the Washington Examiner or something. Anyway, she's normally mostly on Fox News, but you see her elsewhere. And she spits out a lot of right-wing columns, and sometimes they actually sort of kind of make sense. And someone, and I think she was on Fox, might have been on CNN, it doesn't really matter, they were asking her specifically about the provision in the law that now is that in Georgia about not being able to give food and water to people standing in line, that that would be against the law, that that will be, I don't know, stacking the deck in favor of who, I don't know. But here was her answer, and I swear to God, this is what she said. The law says that you're able to call Domino's and have a pizza delivered to you while you're in line. Mm-hmm. There's no preventing that.
The law says
you're just not allowed to hand it out for free to people.
Right.
I swear she did it with a straight face.
No, I believe you.
I swear to God.
I believe you. I don't, and I'm sure they can point to a number of elections that have been decided by people getting free food or water in line. I'm sure, because it's all about protecting the integrity of the election, right? They're able to point to specific examples where elections have been swung over free food and or drink. That's happened, I'm sure.
I would not even go that far and ask that question, because to just ask the question dignifies the stupidity.
It is stupid.
Of the law. Now, back to the big companies in Georgia, and these are heavyweights, okay? Mm-hmm. Home Depot, Dow Jones Industrial Average, UPS, holy Jesus, does it get any bigger than that? Delta, one of the three big airlines that's still standing, right? Coca-Cola, hello, Coca-Cola.
Pretty big deal.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And they are standing by, they are silent. But let's talk here for a second, and it's shameful. It really is shameful. On the issue of saying, oh, we need to boycott them, I don't know whether you want to do that, because then you're into this secondary boycott of a company who really didn't do anything wrong. They're just not saying what you want them to. I mean, it's a tricky area. But with baseball and the Major League Baseball Union and the death of Hank Aaron, just put that in the background there, the great Hank Aaron, who just died this year, right? I mean, to me, he's like the John Lewis of baseball right now in this discussion, in a way, right?
Okay.
Because he bridged that gap.
He did.
Right after Jackie Robinson, all the way into really, you know, the very modern era that we live in.
Correct.
Now.
Hank Aaron, when that team moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta, I'll just remind you, there were certain parts of town that realtors would not show him houses in because black folks were not supposed to live in that part of Atlanta. That happened in 1966.
Yeah. So if the players union, if they had any courage at all, any sense of decency at all, right now, they would say there will be no All-Star game in Atlanta this year. Move the damn game right now. We are not going to participate.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Because it's All-Star game in Atlanta.
It's interesting because the Major League Baseball Players Union has often been seen as the most powerful union in sports, right? It's the one that they point to.
Right, but powerful in terms of economics for themselves.
Yeah, okay? It seems.
Not in terms of social conscience, and right. Maybe I undersold this. They should probably say there's going to be no All-Star game at all anywhere. I mean, you could move it to John Smith High School.
We ain't showing Montana. Up. Yeah, because you can't.
We're not showing up until the Georgia legislature says we made a mistake. We were wrong. We shouldn't have done that. You have to make a stand. And I think that the example that the NBA players set in 1964 at the All-Star game. It was 3 hours before the game, and a majority of the 20 players said, we're not going to play in this game unless the NBA recognizes our union. and gives us the pension and the rights that, that we so deserve. Can you believe up until 1964, there was no pension for retired NBA players?
I,
and the
I
NBA
believe
had
it.
Been around for many decades
I believe
at
it.
That point. And the owners panicked. They completely panicked, and they knew they had to immediately give because this was going to be the first nationally televised NBA game ever.
That's called That's called leverage, kids. That's what you do.
And this was going to put the NBA on the map, and it was going to be televised live, and they knew that they had to do what turned out to be, of course, the right thing, which was give in to the players' demands. Now, the average NBA salary, I believe – then was, well, obviously it was low, but the NBA minimum then was $7,500 a year. You know, that was when all these guys were working second jobs after the season was over. So anyway, the sacrifices made back then, 56 years ago by those guys, you know, a payoff for current players. Point being that the least I think that Major League Baseball players can do through their union right now is not just wear number 42 on everybody's uniform once a year, Jackie Robinson. That that's equivalent now to thoughts and prayers.
It is something that makes you feel good. They have some platitudes. They salute him with a video at all the ballparks, and then you go on with your lives. And I agree that you, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than everybody wearing 42 for one day and talking about what Jackie Robinson did and doing a few different things and maybe wearing the Negro League jerseys for a day or two. It's got to be a little bit more than that. I completely agree with you. And the players have to realize that they've got the power to do this. They can just walk off the field, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I wish it would, because it does need to happen. It's either going to mean something or it doesn't.
I think they have an obligation and they have an opportunity, and it's almost as if the gods have lined up in advance, because they award the All-Star game many, many years ahead.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not like it just showed up in Atlanta for this year.
No.
So they're in a way, they've got the opportunity. If the game was in Kansas City this year, it wouldn't matter much. But it's in Atlanta. It's right there at ground zero. And this has to be the line. This has to be the line that is drawn. I can't figure out, what is your favorite part of this new law? Now, obviously, the food and water in line is just...
I've already had that mansplained to me that it's okay for the government entity itself, the county or the city, can wheel out some sodas or some water and pass that out to people. So apparently these people that are conservatives are really into big government providing water and food for people all of a sudden. It's very interesting to me how that turned around.
Well, but here, the answer to that would be, if they had been doing that ever in the past, ever, when there were 12-hour lines for people to vote, I'd go, yeah, you know what? Not a bad idea. But they never did, and they have no intention to now, because we know what the intent of the law is, which is to get people to throw in the towel and not vote in all these precincts, which are... The darker the district gets, the blacker the district gets, the fewer the places are to vote, and longer the lines.
And you bring up a great point, because they try to winnow it down to the number of places you can vote, and they orchestrate it so that there will be 8-hour lines for you to vote in. That's the point of it.
There's actually, I think, a part of it that's maybe worse than that, which is closing polls at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's great.
Five. And I'm not talking about a Subway 5 foot long,
Foot long. No, that's not
whatever. Yeah. I'm not talking about that kind of five. Boy, that was a great campaign, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really worked out well.
It worked out well for Subway. when you watch election return, when we watch them from here, we're in North Carolina. I think our polls usually close officially like at 7:30. Is that right? Usually on election day. I think
generally
we're
speaking,
7:30
state,
or maybe an 8 o'clock.
You got to be in line. If you're in line at that time, you can vote.
And I think, again, I could be wrong here, I think it's Indiana is this fucked up state where it's 6 o'clock, but everybody else is either 7:30, 8 o'clock local time or later.
Later.
So in a remarkable show of subtlety. They go with the earliest time ever.
Right.
Okay, ever. And it's just beyond description. In addition to the famous discovery or noticing by a lot of folks that right behind Brian Kemp's desk in his office where they signed the bill, where the big picture is of him, is this old fucking plantation. This plantation
where it's a coincidence. Work. It's just a coincidence.
Right. Exactly.
It's just a coincidence.
Right.
So that's your favorite part of this fucked up thing?
Well, I don't know. It's my favorite.
It's a nice nugget.
It's so obvious. Mm-hmm. It's just beyond any explanation. And again, to even ask the question, why are you doing it at 5 o'clock? There's no answer to that. We know what it is. We know why you are doing it. And
well, in Arizona, they when they went before the Supreme Court, they said it. They said, we can't compete. The Republicans can't compete with the Democrats unless we do the shit. And it's the same kind of stuff. So it's not being hidden. You
know, now, the one thing that's in there, and by the way, apparently this was so important. And when Republicans attack Joe Biden and the Democrats right now, for instance, on the $1.9 trillion rescue package that was passed a couple of weeks ago, a lot of the Republicans tried to take credit for different parts of the legislation, that they supposedly allegedly liked, still voted against the whole thing because they couldn't swallow it and they didn't want to burden our grandchildren's grandchildren with debt, because that's very important. And we understand that, of course. But if the criticism involved, there were parts, why couldn't we legislate these separately? And we know why, because one, Joe Biden only has a 4-year term right now to work with. He can't allow them to delay everything forever. So you have to put it together. I think that's where that word omnibus comes from. Those are the bills that include lots of things that sometimes people say it's pork. It shouldn't be in there. It's wasteful money. All right. If that is true, and there is a degree of truth to it in terms of, in a perfect world, we would be voting on all these kinds of things separately. But when you have Senator Molasses from Kentucky, whose whole job is to fuck everything up minute by minute, hour by hour, week by week, day by day, of course, you can't do that. So you got to roll it into one and get all the Democrats on one side of the ship and add Kamala Harris. And you got 51. But if that argument counts for you Republicans on that, why couldn't Georgia put all these provisions in a box, then open the box and take one out at a time? And let's vote on them separately. Let's vote on closing polls at 5 o'clock.
Right.
Let's
see if everybody's okay with that. Yeah.
And let's make sure that it's called we're going to close the polls at 5 o'clock.
The bill.
And of course they would never do that. Or the you can't give out water and food to people act of 2021. They can't do that. So they roll it all together. They rushed it through, right? And an hour later, Kemp signs it. And it's just, but again, as usual, it takes me forever to get to my point.
Yes.
My point is that there are a couple of parts that are within the bounds of, I can understand why they might want to do that, especially the part about having to show some kind of actual identification connected with getting an absentee ballot instead of this idiotic. And I know we think it's idiotic here. I was always wondering about it. The signature match, as if people who you send your absentee ballot to here in North Carolina, here in Guilford County, where we are, when we sent ours in, were they going to look at something I signed 20 years ago to match it? That's bullshit. That was bullshit, right? So it is, and a bunch of other states that are hardly called right-wing states, including, I think, California and New York, have the numerical matching up to get absentee ballots. So Okay, that's in there too. That's in there too. But could have voted on that separately. Would have made more sense. And by the way, that was part of the bullshit that went on in North Carolina when the Republicans went crazy a couple years ago and started with what they called a voter ID law that included all this other shit. It wasn't just voter ID, because when you would present people with the questionnaire, you'd survey them on the different aspect. You know, voter ID, as it was described then, got pretty favorable. I think it polled in the 70% area, which meant a lot of Democrats said, you know, that's not completely unreasonable.
But then shoved a bunch of other shit in there.
They put all this other crap in there. They did it here. But Georgia has had the advantage to look at all these other states, including this one, and say, not good enough. And not even close. Plus, remember, the timing here is only associated with the big lie of Donald Trump that the election was stolen from him.
Which continues. That lie still continues. Right.
Lie still continues. Something has to be done. And it has to be done now. And why does it have to be done? Because there are people who think the election was not on the up and up and it was stolen from him. Of course, the only reason that they think that he had the election taken from him is because he kept telling them
over and over again.
It's the circular craziness.
So why did the Republicans lose in the majority of votes when it came to mail-in voting? Riddle me that. Because he kept saying that mail-in voting was fraudulent.
Right.
That's why. And he was telling his voters not to do it.
But I think even more than that.
Yes.
Every Republican who won an election in Georgia in November has to question, was my election on the up and up?
Right.
Well, yeah, it was on the up and up because I won.
Of course. Right. Well,
but so no election that a Republican wins in a state like Georgia where someone higher up on the ticket claims there was shenanigans in the process, none of them have a problem with the process, but they ignore their own election. Yep. They pretend that it wasn't the same ballot, right? Because, as you know, those Dominion machines, they're very sophisticated.
And I would remind everyone that Dominion was not involved with any election in the United States outside of Los Angeles County. I would just remind that, again, I hate to bring facts into this.
Stop with the facts.
That's part of the reason that they have multi-billion-dollar lawsuits on the table right now against idiots like Sidney Powell, because they weren't involved in any U.S. election outside of Los Angeles County in 2020. So that's part of, I think you're bringing up some great points, and it shouldn't be allowed to stand. If we had gone to this kind of effort to check signatures and match them, we could have avoided the great worldwide economic crisis of 2008 and 2009. If we would have seen signatures to mortgages and so on, if we could have seen those match up, we could have avoided so much, right?
That's funny. If only we had been
that careful. Back in the early part of the century, we could have seen an economic crisis averted around the world. I know you and John the Catholic were texting last night, and I actually caught it this morning. They had a really great special on CNN called COVID War, where they went back and it's now making news all over the place. Obviously, the quotes, especially from Dr. Birx, who looks like she's doing kind of a little bit of image polishing on the downside of this thing. Well, Here's my take on it. She even admits that she's
toast. She admitted on camera, I'm fucked up. I'm ruined.
I think it's not a black or white issue with Dr. Birx, with, again, sensitivity, what we just talked about in terms of using the term black or white. I don't think you can just say she was one way or the other on the issue. When you look at that special and you kind of weigh the evidence, I think that there were things that she did that were solid. And I think that there were things that were questionable too. You saw the special itself. Has it changed anything that any way you feel about anything?
No. Well, no, because I think if you went back and looked at what we were saying all along, by the way, it doesn't just apply to the doctors during the last year of the coronavirus response. It goes back to the beginning of Donald Trump's administration, which is, if you do business with Donald Trump, eventually it will end in tears.
Exactly.
It's just a question of when,
exactly,
not if.
Right.
And for Dr. Birx, an esteemed epidemiologist, mm-hmm. up until the moment that she took on the position with the administration, and because she was kind of a political appointee doctor kind of person, okay, she was not like Fauci, who was not a political appointee and had been where he's been, you know, going back through seven presidents, I guess, going back to Reagan.
That's correct.
Okay, he's been there. So he never really had to fear, quote unquote, getting fired by Donald Trump. That was never going to happen.
But I heard it at the rallies. They said fire Fauci
at rallies. No matter what. And that being said, you know, I'm half and half on Fauci for not being more explicit in his, you know, he was so careful. He was so careful.
Okay.
And Dr. Birx, even worse. And I'm sorry, that video of Trump with the hydroxychloroquine and maybe use a little light and all that, and he's turning to her and looking her, and she looks like she just wants to dig a hole in the floor and go beneath it, right?
Which she does.
And then we essentially got nothing from her on that to directly refute him. I'm sorry, that wasn't good enough. And we can list zillions of people who have said or have written or have let everyone know the reason I don't quit my job in this administration is because I need to be there to protect the country from Donald Trump. I'm the one that knows how to do it, even though he doesn't know I'm doing it because I'm smarter than him. And if I left, he'd replace me with somebody worse. And she was that person. She's not the only epidemiologist in this country. And she sat there and whined and cried. Well, when they brought in Scott Atlas, oh, that was really terrible. Well, you know what? Then you should have fucking gotten out there and said, Scott Atlas is a quack, okay? Mm-hmm. He's a radiologist, and he knows as much about diseases and viruses and vaccines as Jenny McCarthy, okay? Just to pick a famous person. Bad idea. But I did it. And I'm sorry, by none of these people ever walking out and then saying to the world, this is crazy, this is bullshit, you're going to get millions of people sick, hundreds of thousands killed, and I will not be party to that. And here is what we should be doing. There should have been something, and Trump played his part as the mob boss perfectly. He played it perfectly with these people because they aren't politicians, right? And by the way, he's able to cow professional politicians pretty damn well already. So if you get an amateur in there,
right?
But I'm sorry, Deborah Birx, this was not her first job. This wasn't her dream job. This wasn't, oh, if I leave this job, I'll never work in this business again. No, if you left that job, you'd be more likely to work in this business again because you'd be held in higher esteem. And I
but just, she said,
I
but Brad,
do,
she,
I
she
do not buy it.
But she said she said things that pissed off the White House. She said that thing back in August about, for those of you who think you're in a small town or rural area and you think you're safe from this, you're full of crap. And she said the president called her personally on that to yell at her. So she wasn't just kissing his ass or giving the party line.
But that's the point. The point is, you know what? You don't yell. I'm Deborah Birx. You don't yell at me, Mr. President. You do not get to yell at me because I'm right and you're wrong. And if you don't get out there and correct it and agree with me, I'm going to tell the world exactly what this phone call was about. You know, I'm sorry. It just doesn't ring true to me. You had a bigger obligation to the country and to the health of the planet than you did to maintaining your position right down the hallway in the White House while, you know, that last year.
You're not buying it at all.
I do not buy it. I don't buy it because the one thing that gets people's attention is when you leave a position and you leave it on a high note and you leave it with the high ground beneath your feet. And they had it. And that moment in the show with Sanjay Gupta as the host there, where she said, Dr. Birx said, well, they allowed me, They allowed me to say whatever I wanted to when I would go on local television or do an interview around the country or go to symposium. I could say anything I want. I just couldn't say that on national TV. Well, what the fuck is wrong with you? You cannot allow that to be the way it works. Because you know what? I didn't see your interview on KOB TV in Albuquerque last week when you said all the right things. Because on TV, you're sitting there like a sheep and letting Trump trample you.
But don't you think that's necessarily a function of the fact that Donald Trump doesn't watch KKOB in Albuquerque or KGUN in Tucson or whatever? Don't you think that's why they didn't want her doing that?
Of course, he doesn't see all local interviews. He only knows his own little world. We understand.
Well, he knows CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, Fox.
But think of the progression there of what you have to do to get someone to protect Donald Trump from the truth about what's going on with this virus. You're going to tell the truth to people who then will get the mixed message from Trump himself and from you when you're on national TV. When you're on Meet the Press on Sunday, suddenly you're very circumspect. You kind of play both ends against the middle. Doesn't matter how pointed and direct the questions were to her, she never gave. She never cracked.
We now have someone
who knew the truth had.
We now have the answer to that great right-wing talking point about Dr. Fauci saying not to wear the mask, because he explained that very well. Last March, when he said we don't need people walking around wearing masks, he was trying not to create a run to every store in America as people in hospitals were running out of masks. That's what the point of that was. So you can tell Uncle Frank when he goes off on that next time, that's why he said that.
He said that a million times. He said that. That's been asked of him 100 times.
He wasn't telling people not to wear masks. He was trying not to create a panic, which is something that somebody in the White House who used to be there didn't understand, that whole situation. Anybody?
But to be fair, he also said, don't go out and buy a lot of toilet paper either. That didn't work.
Anything else from that special? What about Dr. Redfield? You thought he acquitted himself okay and some of the other people there?
No. Oh, wow. Jesus Christ.
You've got criticism for everybody.
He's a hack.
Oh, wow.
Just remember that people who were appointed by Trump on almost every level, at every position, were second-rate hacks compared to people in the past, right? He had second. Okay. Now, in the case of Dr. Hahn, who was the FDA guy, and he's the guy that got that gig about 6 weeks before we knew about coronavirus.
Right.
Unfortunate timing for him. I think he started in November of 2019.
Right.
But guess what? But his credentials, he's a world famous physician, world famous cancer doctor at MD Anderson in Houston.
Right.
He was cancer doctor. He wasn't a virologist. That's not who should be running the,
it's a thought,
you know, that agency.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a thought. That's true.
Right, because who was right before him? Scott Gottlieb, right?
I think so,
CDC.
Yeah.
Scott Gottlieb was considered this. I always find him to be pretty interesting, because when he got the job at the beginning of the administration, it was thought he's too close to the drug industry. He's kind of a hacky guy. He's a doctor. He's a good doctor, but hack. And he turned out to be so independent. Mm-hmm. And he became the person that you really want. And so what happened? Bye-bye. See ya.
Right.
And you've seen him now for the last year and a half. He acquitted himself, I think, very well. So Trump had to find, remember, just imagine who comes in second to all these jobs. Same with Redfield at the CDC. I mean, you know, I just don't think any of these people acquitted themselves really all that well, because what they're trying to let you know, you're supposed to feel sorry for them because they worked for the biggest piece of shit human being that we've known in our lifetime. We weren't alive when Hitler was roaming the earth. We were all born after Hitler. But after Hitler, Stalin died in the 50s, so I might have been alive while Stalin was alive.
That's just briefly.
Right. And Ayatollahs, but so they were all working under the boot of this horrible person, and they were powerless. They were powerless to do the right thing for the American people in terms of getting the messaging out. And as a result, and I understand it's very difficult with Trump screaming out there about masks and lying about things that he knew were true, that he said to Bob Woodward in February and then lied. I mean, I understand that, but it should be more than just liberals like us reading the fucking New York Times and watching CNN and MSNBC, knowing this was going on, powerless to do anything about it, when the people who were inside and knew that was the truth, they did nothing except tap dance to keep their gigs, supposedly.
But do you also?
There were a bunch of other Scott Atlases ready to come in to take a bunch of those.
There was an army of Scott Atlases. There was no lack of those guys, an unlimited supply of Scott Atlases. Do you also accept the fact that the lack of transparency with China also contributed to this as well? You also have to acknowledge that was part of the problem?
Right, but that's just reality.
Yeah.
That had to be dealt with.
Right.
The idea that because China is a bad actor in almost everything that they do, that they never negotiate in good faith, and they'll always do the cover up at the beginning, certainly until there's just nothing left. That doesn't excuse what's happened in the United States. Hey, the rest of the world had to deal with the same virus. And we'll never be able to live down the fact that with 4 or 5% of the world's population, we had 20 to 25% of the world's deaths. There's just no spinning that. There is spinning that if you're the Trump people. One, it was a hoax. Two, I don't believe it. Three, I'm never going to get it. Four, the vaccine is going to put a transmitter in my ass, and Bill Gates is going to listen to my words.
And I think among the deaths that we've had here in the United States, I think like 10% of those have come from two states, from Florida and Texas. It's something of that nature. So it's something along
more than that, because there's more than 10% of the population in those two states.
Yeah, but still, when you look at
it, the question is, are they outperforming their?
I think they are. In terms of the other thing that I look back when you look back, and this is again, it's not even recent history. It's actually going on now. They've got a story about the CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, choking up while she's on a Zoom call, saying that she's scared about the impending doom of the new wave. When you look back to January, and when the Capitol was stormed by those insurrectionists and those seditionists on January the 6th, that was the same way.
You mean the people that had a love fest with the police.
Right. When that happened on January the 6th, that was dead in the middle of that time when we were losing 3,000 people a day. That has to go down as one of the most miserable weeks in American history. 3,000 people a day are dying. Meanwhile, you're storming the Capitol trying to murder politicians, trying to count votes. I mean, it has to go down. You can talk about your 1968 and the awfulness of it. You can talk about terrible weeks in American history. That's one of the most miserable weeks in American history.
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. And by the way, they got past 4,000 deaths a couple of times.
They did, yeah. It was four.
Past 4,000.
I mean that week in January was just God. I mean, just to think back, how did we survive that? How did we even get past that week in January? And we really haven't dealt with the trauma of it,
right? And as you bring it up, remember when you say that, people who are Trumpers are saying, yeah, that was probably a bad week, but I don't see the big deal. No harm, no foul. Why are you harping on it? Why are you harping on it? And what about Black Lives Matter protests in Minneapolis? What about the, why aren't you, they have their set of talking points to try to deflect from the fact that for the first time since the War of 1812, which I think was actually in 1815, it was one of those historical weirdo things. It's like the Spanish flu of 1917 was actually 1918. You see what strange. I did there?
It's yeah. odd how that continues to be a problem. Did you happen to catch any of the opening remarks in the murder trial of Officer Chauvin in Minneapolis?
No, but I've seen some of the clips and the highlights, and I read a column. It's in today's Washington Post by Paul Butler, who's the former federal prosecutor. I think he teaches at Georgetown now. I mean, he's just brilliant. And the setup to try to defend Officer Chauvin is so horrible. And the story behind it, if it sticks and they can find a juror to buy into the fact that just like in America, the way we used to put rapists on trial, which is to put the rape victim on trial.
Right. What was she wearing and all this stuff?
Right. Remember when the America was really great when we would do that? This is really about putting George Floyd on trial, not Officer Chauvin. And George Floyd had been arrested, you know, a year and a half or so before what happened last year. In a very similar circumstance, the cops pulled him over, and I don't know why they pulled him over. Doesn't even matter why they pulled him over. You don't need a reason to pull a black guy over, right?
No. And, it's usually taillights, but that's even kind of murky.
And he apparently grabbed some drugs and put them in his mouth immediately, okay? And they were really worried that he was going to die right there on the spot. His blood pressure was elevated, you know, all, and they rushed him to the hospital, and he survived. He was fine. And the charges were dropped. Okay. So apparently some egregious offense, like a taillight being out, wasn't even enough to pull him over legally.
Right.
And that was a couple years ago. So the judge in this trial says, that's not admissible evidence right now. That's not relevant to what happened in Minneapolis last summer. What happened, you know, a year and a half before that, and the defense of Chauvin somehow got the investigators in the case to look at the car of George Floyd and look at the police car that was on duty at the time. And suddenly now, after noting that the police car was clean, that it now had residue of fentanyl and some other drugs in it. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? How did they miss it the first time? Somehow, voila, now there are drugs in the police car. So the judge reverses himself and says, yes, you can introduce what happened previously because it matches up so well with what happened this time.
Interesting.
As if, again, that has any real relevancy, and I contend that it doesn't, because all the people that have looked at the autopsy and have looked at the medical records of George Floyd have said he had not that much of anything in his body. He just, that was not enough. Clearly, the reason he died was because pressure was applied to his neck for 8 minutes.
9 minutes and 29 seconds. 9 minutes, 29 seconds. That's what you're going to be hearing a lot of over the next few weeks.
So, unless I'm missing it, and Butler lays it out well, that's the this side versus this side. Officer Chauvin clearly killed him. He shouldn't have done that. That went against all police tactics that are supposed to be used. It was illegal. He's guilty of murder beyond any shadow of a doubt. He should go to prison for a long time, or George Floyd committed suicide. George Floyd just committed suicide underneath the knee of the officer. You have to pick one or the other. There's nothing in between.
Well, that's going to be, you know, that'll be it.
Right. If I was a defense attorney and we were making a movie about
Eric Nelson,
like
is the thing. Eric Nelson is the lead defense attorney in this case.
Okay.
That's the guy.
And we were going to go full off the charts, exaggerated. How do you defend that? What you have to show what really happened. So what I would do is I would get a dog. I would get a dog and I would lay it down and I would put someone's knee on the dog's neck for 8 minutes. And the dog won't have any drugs in the dog. And we'll see if the dog dies or not.
That would never be allowed. That would never be allowed to happen. They would never allow a dog to be treated like that. That's the irony of the whole thing.
There you go. There you go.
That's the irony of the whole situation. I saw Mr. Nelson's opening statement, and he went into how Mr. Floyd tried to conceal drugs from the officers by putting them in his mouth. They found speed balls in his car. He's going to be portrayed as the biggest druggie.
That's not a death sentence, you assholes.
I agree. I agree with this. I think that's absolutely true. And the prosecution, the state, they tried to lay it out as best they could, but I'm afraid this is going to be one of those. This is going to be a very painful moment for America because people are not going to be able to deal with the reality of what's out there. I think that's what we're setting ourselves up for.
We weren't there. Why wouldn't you, if you're the police and you've got this guy like this, you got him down on the ground, why wouldn't you get, if it took four people, two guys on each side of him, take his arms and put them behind him and put the handcuffs on with his hands behind his back? Mm. At that point, there's nothing he can do.
It feels like it.
He has no arms.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's like five of you. There's like five of you with guns. Right? So
they're all just standing there going,
essentially.
That's what you do. That's how you do it.
BradandBrit.com.